The following program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. You may have noticed that one Whole Foods Market store is not like the other. We're proud that each of our stores has its own quirks, a direct connection to the surrounding community, and buys and sells their own products. Whether it's artisanal chocolates exclusive to Bowery, small batch pickles in Chelsea, or a featured craft beer on tap at West 97th, you'll find that each store is a little bit different than the next. With six Manhattan locations, Whole Foods Market offers a taste of every neighborhood. Come see us in Tribeca, Bowery, Union Square, Chelsea, Columbus Circle, or the Upper West Side. Open 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. For more information, visit www.wholefoodsmarket.com.
Welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. Actually, it's Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. Forgot to mention that. So sorry if I sound a little scratchy nasally. I've been fighting a cold for a week. That's why I couldn't do a live show last week, because I had no voice. It's coming back. It's coming back slowly this week. But last week we aired the classic cheese doodle episode, I believe. A classic from the archive. Anyway, it seems like I've been starting my shows out by giving a weather report the last couple months, which was not really my intention, but the weather has been so screwed up in New York this spring that it seems to set the tone for whatever it is I'm going to talk about that week. And so if you're not in this region, you may not know this, but we went from having basically like 50 degree chilly gray rain to 92 degrees over the weekend, and sunny and humid and hot. So we went from like March weather to August weather in the course of 1 week. And that is not fun. And that's wreaking havoc with my garden. And you know, it's the spring, it's gardening season. And I had gotten a really early start this year. I talked about this a couple weeks ago, that in early April, we had a nice warm spell and I was optimistic and I got an early start and I planted a bunch of stuff in early April. And that was kind of a mistake because only the really like hardy, you know, cold tolerant stuff made it. The arugula, the spinach made it, some of the lettuce made it. Things like peas, they never grew. I had to replant them three more times to get them to come up. I have some green bean action now. I put in some tomato plants, some okra plants. Things are starting to come up now, but a lot of them had to be replanted a few times because I got in too early. Then we had a big, long cold spell. Then we had a month of rain in May. And so my early lead was completely wiped out, and now I'm 2 months behind on some things. So I'm annoyed about the weather. Except the saving grace in all of this is that no matter what the weather, what happens, how cold it is, how wet it is, how snowy, if you plant radishes in the spring, you will get radishes in 3 weeks. They are the most resilient little lumps of red goodness that I can imagine. I mean, you cannot screw them up. You plant them in April, and you'll be eating them by Passover at the end of April. Well, Passover was late this year. It's incredible. It's like a three-week start to finish, and that's my kind of gardening. Because I am an impatient kind of person. I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait 80 days for my first tomato or my first cucumber. You know, I'm not going to grow pumpkins because I don't want to wait until October to pick my one stupid pumpkin. I want it now. I'm like Veruca Salt in Willy Wonka. I want it now. That first warm weekend in the spring, I'm out there. I'm putting seeds in the ground. And 3 weeks later, God damn it, I want food. I want to harvest. And I started growing radishes because they're so easy. They're so easy. They're so foolproof. You can't kill them. They come up in 3 weeks. But I never really liked them. I didn't like them because the ones I ate as a kid were so bad. But now I've grown to love them. I appreciate them. Anything that I can grow and pick in 3 weeks, I love. And I love all their relatives and their cousins from all over the world. I'm embracing the radish this spring. Now, we probably all, you know, grew up eating those sorry-ass bags of red radishes from the supermarket. They were like They're like the vegetable version of those atomic fireball candies. I always hated those too. There are always kids who loved the atomic fireball. I hated them. I hated them. I didn't see the point in eating them. And those supermarket radishes are like that. They were all heat and no flavor and woody and tough, and they were always kind of beat up and buggy looking, and they looked like crap. I don't understand why they were sold, and they were in that plastic bag all sealed up for like 6 months. Why buy them? We always put them into our salad growing up, and I would just pick them out. And my mom still buys them. She still buys those bags. To me, those bags of radishes are like the ultimate symbol of industrial produce. They're grown for size and for color, but they taste like balls of wood dipped in nail polish remover. I don't understand why people would eat them. So I never understood the appeal of the radish until I started cooking professionally and I started eating things like daikon and the Korean version of daikon and French breakfast radishes, which are so good, or watermelon radishes, or all those other kind of juicy, sweet, and hot varieties that are out there that all got left behind in the mad rush to standardize and industrialize and put those radishes in those little plastic bags and sell them in the supermarket. When I was in junior high school, I took German. Yes, my language choice was German. I took German, I think, due to a very bad case of internalized anti-Semitism, which of course I've gotten over now, but that's a whole other show. That's another show. We'll talk about that some other time. But in my German class, we talked a lot about culture. You know, a great way to learn about a culture and a language is to talk about what people eat. And so I remember learning about how people in Germany would eat. They would have gigantic mugs of beer, and with the gigantic mug of beer, they would eat sliced up radishes dipped in salt. Radi, R-A-D-I was the word. Radishes dipped in salt with their beer. Apparently, this is a very long-standing tradition. It goes all the way back to the ancient Greeks. The ancient Greeks prized their radishes, and there was a Greek physician who said that if you eat radishes with alcohol, it prevents intoxication. Who knew? So maybe that's why the Germans always did it. I don't know. I think they do it in Mexico, too. So it makes sense to serve radishes with beer instead of, say, pretzels, which are known to make you more drunk and encourage intoxication. Everybody knows that. Now, at the time when I learned about this combo of beer and radishes, I found it utterly repulsive because at the time I hated both. I hated beer and I hated radishes. I couldn't understand why people would like either one. Now, of course, things have changed quite a bit. And now I really get it. Not just the beer, of course, but I get it because I ate those little pink and white French breakfast radishes years ago, which are, they're sort of long and finger shaped and they're pink and white. And in France, you eat them with butter and salt and slices of baguette for breakfast. So I got it when I ate those. And I got it when I had the first like pile of that very finely spun, shredded daikon that's used as like a bed on every plate of sashimi and most people leave behind, but I always eat it because it's so delicious. I got it from that. I got it when I went to Korea and they served slices of a giant white radish just on the side with Korean barbecue, sort of as an accompaniment to that. Or the radish water kimchi that I ate in Korea. That was so good. I entered the total radish enlightenment zone after eating all of these things. I got it. The radishes cleared my head and cleared my sinuses. They wash your palate free of all the salt and the fat and the animal when you're eating the barbecue. The radish has revealed itself to me as the Windex of the food world. It washes away the streaks. It clears things out. In a good way. The Windex of the food world. In a good way. We're going to take a very quick break. I'm going to drink a little bit of water, try to get my voice back, and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Heritage Radio Network is about to celebrate the 100th episode of The Main Course with Patrick Martins and Katie Kiefer. The Main Course has welcomed talent that ranges from Temple Grandin on animal handling to Eric Asimov, the New York Times wine critic. Chefs and farmers, distributors, and restaurateurs, everyone who is involved in the food industry, gets to put their two cents in on how and why we eat what we eat. Check out the archives for more information on the fascinating roster of guests that have graced the table for The Main Course, and be sure to tune in to the 100th episode, Sunday, June 6th, at noon, on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Weitz, your host. And sorry about the quality of my voice this week. It's been a rough week, and it's only Tuesday. Anyway, talking about radishes tonight, the red hot lumps. If I had a band, that's what I would call it. Red Hot Lumps. It's good, right? It's hot. Anyway, so we were talking about radishes and how I've become enlightened by tasting all different kinds of radishes in the radish family because I never liked them growing up. And of course, since we're exploring that family, you know, they are a brassica. They're related to turnips and mustard. Of course, it's what makes them pungent. We cannot forget horseradish, of course, which is the, you know, the bad mother of all of the radishes. It's at the top of the radish heap. But it's so sad because horseradish gets kind of sidelined in its fresh form. I think you only see it fresh, you know, maybe once a year at Passover. If you celebrate Passover, you put it on your Seder plate. Other than that, you only see the prepared stuff, you know, the shredded horseradish in a bottle mixed with vinegar. Sometimes it's white, sometimes it's pink. And I love that stuff. It's great. I love eating it with gefilte fish or with smoked salmon, or you mix it with a little creme fraiche and you put it on, you know, roast beef. It's good. But the fresh stuff is amazing. You grate some of that fresh horseradish onto like sardines or onto a salad and blam. I mean, talk about Windex. It's like Windex on crack shot right into your nasal passages. That's probably what I should be eating tonight, actually. So this past Passover, you know, I had my horseradish on my Seder plate, and then we were done with it. I didn't want to throw it out. So I stuck it in a cup of water to see if it would root, and it rooted. I knew it would root. I've done it before, actually. But you put it in water, and the little roots start to grow. It, like, miraculously comes back. It's like a resurrection. And so I rooted it for a while, and then I planted it in the garden over the weekend, and now it's growing. And a couple years ago, I did this, and an animal came along and ate it, which I couldn't believe. Like, what stupid animal would eat a horseradish out of the garden? I hope it suffered. But this time, it's in the fenced-in zone of the garden, animal-free zone. So it's just quietly growing in there, getting bigger and hotter and more pungent and more potent with all this hot sun. So hopefully, next fall, I'll have a nice big root, and I'm going to dig that up and eat it. But, you know, I was sort of thinking back, like, about in my culinary career, what I've done with them, how I've cooked them. They're, you know, kind of really underappreciated little vegetables. And I remembered that coming off of my childhood experience of just those awful bagged industrial little marbles, back when I worked at Savoy, excuse me, back in the 90s, I was a line cook at Savoy, and I encountered the first radish that kind of broke me out of that mold. And we had one of the farmers that we used had delivered, or we had picked up this basket of something they called Easter egg radishes. And Easter egg radishes are actually like a blend. It's a bunch of different varieties put together. But they're all these beautiful colors. They're like lavender and purple and pink and white. And it was so beautiful and so seductive. They really looked like Easter candy. They were called Easter egg radish. And if you're a regular listener of this show, you know that I'm a total sucker for Easter candy. It's like one of my obsessions because I was never allowed to have it as a little overweight Jewish child. No Easter candy. So looking at those Easter egg radishes, I just like fell in love. I couldn't believe how beautiful they were. And I have no idea how we used them. I can't remember. They probably went into a salad or something. I didn't even realize you could cook with them at the time. I was just completely hooked by the color and the realization that there were so many beautiful other varieties of things out there. It was like working at Savoy sort of opened my eyes to a lot of that stuff. And, Years later, I also encountered the watermelon radish, which I first saw out at the Chef's Garden in Ohio, probably about 6 or 7 years ago. The watermelon radish sort of looks like a pale green tennis ball, not fuzzy, like shaped like a baseball, smooth on the outside, and it's pale green. But when you cut it open, the green fades to white, which fades to bright, deep watermelon pink. So you slice it open, and it's like you cut open a watermelon. It's got that same color pattern. And they're just stunningly beautiful. And you just slice them up raw or julienne them, toss them with a little lime juice or a little olive oil. Amazing. Beautiful. Beautiful stuff. But still nothing cooked. Still raw. And then I was thinking about how years ago when I first kind of took a break from restaurant cooking before I started teaching, I did a year or so of freelance work in New York. And you can actually do that in New York. You can freelance with caterers and you can freelance with various people. And it was good. It was a good gig for about a year and a half there before I started teaching full time. And one of the things I occasionally did was work at the James Beard House. Now, I think now it's all on a voluntary basis at James Beard. But back then, they would hire freelancers. And I was assisting the chef there one day. And he was doing a lunch and he took a daikon, a really big daikon. And up until then, I had only known daikon as like something you ate raw with sushi. And he tourneed the daikon. So if you don't know what a tournée is, tournée is a cut where you take a vegetable and you cut them down into little tiny football-shaped pieces. Tournées are the bane of all culinary students. We force them to learn how to tournée and we lie to them, telling them that they will have to use this skill in the future out there in the restaurant world. They probably never will, except that I had to that day. I had to tournée that daikon. But we make them do it anyway because it's good for them and it builds character. So Robert, the chef, took these tournée daikon and he cooked them in a combination of soy sauce, sugar, and butter, and a little chicken stock. Basically, he braised them and then he glazed them. That's how you glaze a vegetable. You cook it with chicken stock and butter and sugar, but he threw in soy sauce too. And the butter and sugar melted and made the glaze, and the soy sauce reduced. And it was the most beautiful, brilliant thing I had eaten in a long time. It was like the daikon stayed kind of crisp, but got also tender. And it picked up like the sweetness and the butteriness and the saltiness. And it was the first time I had had the combination of butter and soy sauce together too. And that butter and soy sauce is like truly what fusion cooking is or should have been about and isn't. Combinations like that, butter and soy sauce, are brilliant together. But it kind of like tamed the daikon. It took away its kind of raw, aggressive edge. And I was completely hooked. I had never thought of cooking it before, and I was totally hooked, and I still cook that to this day. And actually, a lot of them I kind of prefer to eat cooked than raw, even the little, you know, bagged, lifeless, red lumps of crap ones from the supermarket, or the juicy, you know, sweet ones that I've grown before in the spring in my bathtub garden. They're good roasted, too. I mean, you can kind of make a bad radish better by roasting it, so you just toss them with some olive oil and some salt, and you roast them up like a carrot, and they get really soft and sweet and mild, just like carrots. And people are really taken by it, sort of by surprise. Like, they go, oh, what's that? They don't think of them as something that can be cooked. So, anyway, back to my garden, which is where I started this whole thing tonight. So, I always plant radishes in the spring because of that instant gratification. And this year I thought, oh, maybe I'll plant something else. Instead of those little round cherry bell radishes, I'll plant these little mini daikon. I found these seeds for like little tiny daikon. And I thought, ooh, that'll be good. I'll try that. So they went into the bathtub. You know, I have this bathtub garden I've talked about. Old clawfoot bathtub. And I put them in, and in true radish form, they sprouted practically overnight. Very exciting. I had leaves within a couple of days. But then those leaves started to grow and grow and grow and grow until the leaves were like a foot tall and they were shading out everything else in there. The arugula, the other greens were getting completely overshadowed by these stupid greens. And so I started eating the greens. I would cut off the greens and cook them and eat them, and they were good. They're kind of mild and tastes a little like arugula without any of the kick. And I would like saute them up with eggs. I had to use them up. I had to keep cutting the greens back because they were overshadowing everything else. And then finally I said, this is ridiculous. I'm not getting anything from this. I'm just getting a lot of greens. I pulled up one of those little mini daikon and it was like the size of a golf pencil. You know, those little tiny golf pencils, but not even as thick and really woody and just really bad, like a total radish disappointment experience overall. So out went the mini daikon. I pitched them into the compost heap. In went more arugula, my standby green, my beloved arugula, which grows in any weather and always tastes good, and you get it in 3 weeks. Yet again, I planted arugula seeds on Saturday morning, and by Monday morning, I had little tiny sprouts coming up. That's a vegetable you can love. That's what you want to grow in your garden. So my radishes were kind of a bust this year. I didn't get those little cherry bells that I normally grow, and I had to throw away my daikon, so kind of a bust. The only high point was that I got the leaves, and it turns out that those leaves are really, really high in calcium. So there you go. Not a total bust. We're going to take another really quick break, and when we come back, a little more about radishes. You probably haven't heard enough yet. Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Whole Foods Market. Welcome back to Why We Cook, the Chef Smarty Pants radio show. I'm Erica Wides, your host, Chef Smarty Pants. And a couple things that I've been forgetting to mention over the past few weeks. If you are a fan of this show, you can always find us on Facebook. Just look for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network and become a fan, become a friend. I would love to hear from you. Comments, questions, I'll take it all. I love it. You can also always leave comments on the Heritage Radio Network website. And we love those comments too. We're always looking to read those. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chef Smarty Pants. I don't tweet much, but when I tweet, I like to make it meaningful. So you can follow me on Twitter also. And just getting back to radishes briefly, because I just can't stop talking about them. This is much more like one of the older Why We Cook shows, the sort of single subject, in-depth exploration of a subject kind of show. Like a little kind of return to the past. I haven't been doing these for a while, and I won't be doing them because I'm changing a lot about the show. I'll get to that in a minute. But just one other little interesting tidbit about the radish. In Oaxaca, Mexico, on December 23rd, as part of the Christmas holiday season, there is a radish festival. I didn't know this. Thanks, Wikipedia. It's called Noche de los Rábanos, the Night of the Radishes. December 23rd. It's like a pre-Christmas celebration. And the people in this town take radishes that they have left growing in the ground. So they don't harvest them in the fall. They leave them in the ground so they grow to be like 6 pounds. So they're like pumpkins. And then they carve them into religious iconography and popular cultural figures out of radishes. And they have these contests for carving them. So everybody grows their radish as big as they possibly can. And then they carve them into all sorts of figurines and images and stuff, and then they have these contests, and it's Noche de los Rábanos. Who knew? Not me. Kind of like Halloween, but instead of a pumpkin, you carve a radish. It's okay by me. I saw a picture of it actually on Wikipedia. They had a link to this festival, and then there was a picture of some of these radish carvings. They were pretty amazing. Anyway, that's enough about radishes. I'm sure you're like done with it. I'm done with it. How much more can you say? They are extremely nutritious, by the way. Lots of minerals. So, you know, maybe look at them again. Give them another chance if you rejected them flat out like I did as a child. And if you drink them with beer, remember, they'll prevent you from getting drunk, apparently. I'm going to try that out next weekend. So, like I just hinted at before, I do want to give you a little advance heads up that in the next couple of months, you will be noticing some major changes to this show. I'm not going to give it away, but the name will be changing. The subject matter will be changing. It's still going to be a show about food. It's still going to be me. But I'm taking it in a new direction. I've decided that there's kind of enough being said about food in a kind of general, let's talk about food and how interesting food is kind of sense. And I want to go in a slightly more specific direction about something that I am extremely passionate about and feel very strongly about. I just want to put it out there so nobody gets freaked out by any big changes. Don't worry, it'll still be me, it'll still be the same show, just better. We're just going in a little bit of a different direction. Okay? So I'll be kind of leading up to it over the next few weeks, and we'll probably be relaunching the show sometime in hopefully July. So you'll see. Big changes, new website, the whole thing. Just putting that out there. Anyway, I have pretty much no voice left, so I'm going to call it a night here. But thanks always to Jack in the control room, and thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. This little nugget comes from Food Safety News, which is a blog that you can get every single day if you want to sign up for it. I love it. And in this one, it says, in what qualifies as ground-shifting news in the food safety world, the U.S. Department of Agriculture on Tuesday lopped 15 degrees off of its recommended temperature for safely cooking whole cuts of pork, aligning it with guidelines already in place for beef, veal, and lamb. Heating steak, roasts, and chops to an internal temperature of 145 degrees Fahrenheit, so long as the meat sits briefly before it's eaten, is enough to ensure its safety, the USDA said. This latest revision for pork comes again on the advice of the FSIS, which is the Food Safety Inspection Service, which says cooking cuts of pork to 145 degree Fahrenheit with a 3-minute rest is as safe as cooking them to 160 degrees, the previously recommended temperature with no rest time. So now you can have a little bit of pink, juicy pork, even if you're buying commodity pork, which should vastly improve its taste and eating quality. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.